Welcome again to the Watch More Football show. We are back on the Genre vs Sports YouTube channel, which is a brand new channel that we've created just for this video at the moment. We do have more sports content coming as well, so please like and subscribe. It will help us out because it's a brand new channel. However, we are connected to the Genreverse family, and please check out our regular Genreverse YouTube channel. There's everything on there: entertainment, reactions, anime, movies, live actions, all that sort of stuff that we cover on there as well. My name is Cam Clark. I'm the host of the show. I'm also one of the senior editors over at LRMonline.com. So all the stuff that we're covering on the Genreverse YouTube channel, we also cover in written form, pretty much, over on LRMonline.com. So please check us out if you get the chance. What is this show about? Well, generally, it's about us being back, discussing the results, looking at predictions, what's coming next, the biggest talking points of the week, with an absolute bias for the teams that we actually support, because we're not journalists here, we're just regular fans, the same as you guys, so we absolutely are just as prejudiced on what we think about our own team as anyone else is. Back again is Mick, Dave and Ryan. Guys, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
Good. So we're going to start this week. People might be aware that there was no Premier League games. If you're in America, you know, you may be wondering what the hell happened to the Premier League this weekend. Everyone else will know that it's
actually being able to enjoy a weekend for a change.
Nah, see, I'm the opposite, man. See, when the Premier League's on, it's like, it just feels like you've been punished and put in jail for 2 weeks for your views in football, you know, or something like that. That's what it feels like to me. But maybe it's because although officially I'm English, but my dad would kill me for saying that. You know, I associate, or I would represent Scotland if I had the chance, shall we say. So maybe that's the reason I don't care about international football, because we're pretty rubbish. Although we are qualified already for the Euros. But anyway,
I don't know how you can't care about football, international football, when you've got Scott McTominay banging them in every week.
Like, he's just English. I don't care. You know, that's the truth. You know, we're just a team full of people who are either Scottish, which we don't produce a lot of good players at the moment, or they're English and they're not good enough to get in an English team, so we've poached them. Just like Ireland did back in the day.
Just like you've got to poach three players from our team, aren't you? You've got to poach three players from Newcastle.
Well, they're trying, but rumour is that Anthony Gordon, who does qualify to play for Scotland, does want to wait to see if he can make the England squad instead.
Don't blame
because
him.
I think he's had the word that, you know, he's not that far away. But it's a tough position for someone to try and break into, because England are blessed with forwards, especially left-sided forwards, really. So it could be a number of years before he gets a chance. And I think that's why Scotland look to try and poach him. Whereas with Harvey Barnes, I can kind of see it would be good for him. I'm just wondering,
Elliot Anderson.
What's Big Dan Burns' situation, Mick? Has he ever been to Gretna Green?
Oh, well, I can't see. I don't know.
Nip round his house tonight. Ask Big Dan if he's ever been up Gretna Green, because he's never playing for England, and we could be doing with him for Scotland.
I'll send him over for you.
That'll be good enough. Just when you see him doing Asda, or if you're at Greg's, when he's at Greg's or something like that, just let him know.
He's always in for a steak bake.
Well, you know, when in Rome. But I guess you guys might want to talk about your nation a little bit, who had a couple of pretty grim games against Pond Life. Let's put it that way. North Macedonia and Malta, absolute titans of international football. What was the results? What was your result against Malta? You won
2-0. Was it?
You won 2-0.
Yeah.
It was boring. Whenever you're playing Malta, it's kind of one of those things. Like, if it's anything less than five, you're an embarrassment. Because Malta,
if that's the case, then we beat them 4-0. We beat them 4-0. So
embarrassing before 2-0. As well.
I mean, Friday wasn't a good game. They didn't play well. It wasn't a good game at all. Last night was just as bad. I fell asleep halfway through the second half.
I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that. You didn't watch it at all last night, Dave? No.
Did you watch the Malta game?
Yes. Half watched it. I had the intention of watching it, and it was just so boring. I just spent half the time on my phone.
Yeah, I kind of find that, like, you know, that'd be me. Yeah. I'd have had it on in the background and just not bothered, but I was busy doing something else. Right, did you watch both games? Sea Lions Legend? Ryan, did you watch both games?
No. Was there football on? I went to the cinema on Friday and then was doing other stuff last night. So, yeah, I missed both games. But, I mean, I don't really read too much into it. Everyone is so worried about not getting injured. They've already topped the group. It wasn't that much of an experimental side. So there was maybe one or two players trying to get into the squad. But, you know, the important thing is how they play in the March international break next year, I think. That'll be the last one before the tournament. That's, you know, if they're a bit sluggish there.
So, like, warm up before the tournament kind of thing. Just, I get what you mean. Just,
you know, nothing really. Yeah, nothing.
I mean,
really,
I'm hearing England fans saying today, if they don't get ready, Southgate, they've got no chance of ever winning a competition and blah, 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 you know, maybe foreigners and all that sort of stuff.
I think he's got one more chance next year, and then I think he'll probably, if he can't do anything next year, he'll probably call it a day, and I think that'll be fair enough. I think he'll still be looked back on as one of our better managers compared to who we have over the last 20, 30 years.
I mean, he is still, although he's never won anything, he's been more successful than any other manager since Alf Ramsey, who's the only other one that's ever won something.
He's turned England into a player again. You know, we can go into a tournament saying England, you know, should be one of the favourites and say it with a straight face. That's, you know, that's his biggest achievement. I think even when you had like the big generation in the mid-2000s, I don't think anyone was really expecting England to go all the way in those tournaments. It was just, we've got loads of, you know, loads of big players, but weren't really a team. Whereas Southgate's made a team, even if it's been at the expense of including a few informed players.
I don't know, but I kind of think, and let me pose this question to you guys, because I don't really have a badge in this fight, if you like, but I kind of feel that with some England fans, it's like, back in the day, you were scudding teams like Malta 10-0, but then losing all the important games. And Southgate so far seems to win most of the important games, but sometimes don't turn up against the pond life, if you like. And what would you
rather?
I think that's better.
Absolutely.
I would rather that the players
are more focused on the big games and they're like, oh, this is just Malta. We've had, trying to, you know, make sure I don't get injured here.
Yeah. We've had big wins over Spain, Germany, Italy, Croatia, although not in the tournament. We've had really big wins under Southgate, which have sort of, you know, we've clearly been a better team as well. It's not been a smash and grab. Like, you know, the last Euros in the quarterfinal against Germany,
we absolutely outplayed
Germany. And that is not something that I don't think anyone's ever seen in any of our lifetimes. Apart from maybe that.
Apart from 5-1.
Yeah. I was too young for that. I didn't.
My only issue I had was that in a nothing game, like playing against Malta, that he played Kieran Trippier at left back for the entire 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I just don't get that. Right. Like, he's not even an actual left back anyway. Like, why would you not take that opportunity to pick like maybe an up and coming left back and say, here you go, you get two games to impress me?
I mean,
I don't know what's happened there. I don't know what's happened there, because he played the first half at right back, then he played the second half at left back.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just bring Lewis on, who played the full 90 last night? Because Trippier's gone home.
Give him a chance.
And I don't understand why Trippier's gone home as well. Personal reasons. It was a personal issue,
so we wouldn't know what that is at the moment. I kind of think it's him just going to Southgate, listen, my legs are fucked and I need a rest. So, you know, I ain't playing this shitty game against North Macedonia, guys. So get me on a plane back home. I'm 34. I ain't no spring chicken anymore. That's probably not what happened at all. But, you know, that's what I like to think.
Wigan Hall.
In my head. I mean, I guess the biggest thing that came out, apart from, you know, England's score goals about the international, was the fact that France won 14-0. You don't see that very 15. Often in the old soccer. It's never 15, is it? But, you know.
Never 15.
An inside joke with us that, you know, the amount of times that we've seen 9-0 victories, and we'd always say it's never 10. It is occasionally 10, and in this time it was even more than that, it's 14. But
let's take nothing away. They were played against 10 men. Not a lot.
They were playing against Gibraltar.
The goals were good.
Yeah, but you score good goals against bad teams.
I respect Giroud coming on in basically stoppage time and still sort of saying, I'm going to pad my stats here and I'm going to score an overhead kick in the 90th. I respect the hustle there. You know, compared to, just, you know, some Newcastle right back, you can't be asked playing against Macedonia, you know.
You know, after scoring a hat trick against Gibraltar, I just kind of think, meh, you know, probably there's, you could probably get 11 really good non league players together that would give Gibraltar a game, in all honesty, you know. About training, but you know, that's just the way it goes. So I'm not that impressed by it, but I don't think it tells us anything really. Any other big stories for the international games that you want to talk about?
The Republic of Ireland are really happy because they had a massive game against the Netherlands that only one result would do. They went out and got the loss that they needed to ensure that the Netherlands went through and they got their Nations League playoff spot. So they've still in with a chance of qualifying for the tournament. Against all odds,
even though they're second bottom
from the group, and
there's the situation of Ukraine versus Italy as well, which was
that was
controversial.
Harsh. Was it 92nd minute?
There was a penalty, there should have been a penalty in that game.
Yeah,
and when you watch it back, you're just like, hello, how could that not be spotted as? But I mean, we've talked about so many refereeing issues lately that it just shows you it's not just the Premier League, it's all the refs everywhere.
Refs got the same bookie as Sandra tonight.
It's a big one though, isn't it? I mean, that whoever won that match went through to the Euros, so big for Ukraine.
And, you know, Italy are defending champions. You know, Italy are defending champions, so is there maybe something dodgy there? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, normally I would just say whenever somebody says, oh, there's something dodgy going on, I would just normally dismiss it as you're being an idiot, you're being a conspiracy theorist. It's just ineptitude from people. It's not bias. But it is Italy. And, you know,
FIFA president not say it would be a shame if Italy didn't make the Euros as well previously?
It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, you should automatically qualify anyway as defending champion, really, shouldn't you?
You should, actually. I agree, actually.
Yeah.
But a lot changes in 4 years.
It does,
Yeah, but I think that's my problem with international football. The amount of qualifiers, the amount of like games that they make them play, it's all to do with just putting more money into FIFA. That's what it's about. It's about making money for FIFA as an organisation so that they can give it to third world countries who pretend they're going to spend it in football and then buy rockets. You know what I mean? That's basically what happens to all the money in world football at the moment. Oh, we're going to give this to, I'm going to make up a false name for a country, Zimbabwe, right? We're going to give it to you because you're a developing football nation, and then Colonel Bujalski takes it on, says, yes, we're building football fields, and then goes and attacks his neighbours. I mean, that's just how FIFA finance works, though, right?
I thought Lukdanga was the leader of
the team. Lukdanga's their best player.
I thought you were going to say Colonel Sanders or something.
I mean, Colonel Sanders would be fine, although I don't, being that he was actually a real person, I best not get libelled, you know, or anything like that for trying to say he was actually a third world country warlord trying to start his own war. But you know what I mean. All right, I'm being flippant, but it's all these pointless games. I kind of just want the top teams to automatically get into the competitions, because where international football is good is once we get to the tournaments, it's good. You know, the actual Euros, the actual World Cup, it's brilliant. I watch every game because every game matters. They matter. Yeah. Everybody's fighting for pride. Every game's worth something, you know. And these qualifiers, they're just not.
Yeah,
I don't agree, you have to have the
qualifiers to let the underdogs like Scotland in.
I'm not saying Scotland should get in because we've never proved enough that we should.
Things like Saudi Arabia beating Argentina in the World Cup last year. You know, you need stuff like that alongside the big heavyweight knockout matches.
I just wish it could be streamlined. Maybe they could base it one tournament on your performance at the previous one for everybody that got to the knockout stages, for example, you auto qualify for the next one or something like that, so that they, because it's the amount of games that your players have to play when they're owned and they're paid their wages every week by a club, and then the club has to send them off to just get injuries every couple of months.
This is why I always say, I've said it to you before as well, I don't agree with the qualifiers and friendlies through the season. You've got a pre-season there. If you played at the end of the season finishes earlier, so you've got time to play your qualifiers at the end of that season. And then
I get what you mean, because you'd be finished earlier because you wouldn't be having those stoppages all the way through.
Because you've got
all
like,
those weeks you would save at the end.
I think
you've got about four or five international breaks through the season.
Yeah. I think as well, though, it's not just about the games. Like what I said about Southgate making a team rather than just picking a bunch of players is the international managers need time to actually get their ideas on. And if it's just like, say, 3 weeks at the end of a season when everyone's already checked out, they're not going to be able to do that. Where, you know,
but then
it's frustrating that you get into the flow of the season and then it stops. But it's dotted throughout the year, so you've got more time to sort of get your ideas across and let, you know, if you had like 3 weeks of just really intense international football at the end of a hard season, I don't think it would really
You're going to have more than 3 weeks, aren't you? Because the Premier League season's finished. Do you know what I mean? You've got... Yeah. They'll probably end up finishing
and
in
all
April.
Other seasons, because every but other then, league would finish early.
And then you've got
they wouldn't have the international breaks.
But that's only really in Europe. That's only really in Europe. Everybody else, you know, even like Scandinavia, their seasons work on a completely different calendar. South America,
South
a completely
America,
different calendar. It, you know,
well, fuck them. I don't care about them.
I can understand that, to be perfectly honest. But I think you can't say that, especially when it comes to South American football, which is, you know, it may not have the money of European football, but in terms of success when it comes to international tournaments, they actually do better overall when you consider, you know, the size of them compared to Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, but I know one thing, international breaks are shit. So let's talk Premier League. So what's the biggest story that's happened in the Premier League? Well, it's not been on. Well,
it's
if there's
minus
anybody
10,
that can lose points while there's no football actually being played, it's Everton. And Everton have been deducted 10 points, lads. You all know this. This is because of breaching financial fair plays, which is like a charge that they admitted to, I would say. It's worth knowing that. So it didn't take as long to get investigated, because that might come up in a minute. But it's an independent panel that decides how much, and that would actually be the biggest points deduction. Well, it is, because it's been applied already. It's the biggest point deduction that any team's ever had in the Premier League. So previously it was Middlesbrough, I think it was. Was it?
Portsmouth
that get the 9 points, sorry, for going out of business. Middlesbrough was just 3, sorry, I forgot. And then we had Man United and Arsenal getting points deducted for them getting into a brawl with each other. So it's very few and far between. But 9, you know, going out of business, I can kind of see that. But at the same time, I also think it's harsh, because then you're getting that double whammy. And there's something about the Everton. I would say that the average person thinks that the punishment, 10 points, is a little bit harsh. So before we kind of get into the ins and outs here, does anyone think it's a just punishment and they should just suck it up and take it? Or does anyone else think that the point deduction itself is harsh?
It's difficult, because we're also comparing it to what City and Chelsea can potentially get as well. So if they weren't a factor, you'd be like, oh yeah, just, you know, fine Everton, you know, deduct points on Everton, because... Yeah.
It's a completely, I think it's
punished,
a completely different... It's a completely different situation from City and Chelsea, though, because
basically
Everton are being punished because they spent too much money and they've tried to put a lot of on their book. They're building a new stadium and that doesn't count towards any of the financial fair play rules, and they're trying to keep reassigning money that they've spent to the stadium project, and that's where the disagreements come from. Whereas City and Chelsea, they're being accused of just completely fudging the books and trying to hide money
it's
coming
a lot
in.
Serious.
City one's been going on a hell of a long time. Yeah. Really hasn't.
Yeah, but we know why it's taking so long, because Man City's lawyers are doing everything. And I was watching another podcast.
But it's also,
they're doing everything they can to delay the process to hold it up in the courts and make it go years and years and years before they ever get to any resolution.
But it's also, it's also a much more complex case than Everton is. You know, Everton is fairly.
Of course.
But technically, they've already been found guilty of it in Europe. That's why it's been brought to the attention of the Premier League.
Europe's got a statute of limitations, though, which the Premier League does not. So in the statute of limitations, they can't re-punish Man City. They gave them a crappy fine and basically a slap in the wrist, them and PSG, and said, OK, you scamps, we'll let you off this time. You can argue about whether that was good or bad, but that was UEFA's decision. It's nothing to do with the Premier League.
I think the 10 points are sort of more going to be there as a deterrent, and I think they're probably more going to be, you know, the teams that are going to be worried about it are your sort of your Wolves and your
mid-table
who throw everything at coming up, throw everything at staying up, and you know, if they don't manage that, then they can be in a lot of trouble, and I think that's probably where where it's going to be seen, you know. They're going to be the teams that are probably going to hit with these sort of penalties.
Comments about
the likes of
these kind of teams. And one of the people were saying that none of the other clubs that they know of are even close at the moment to potentially getting charged, that they're all basically doing their job. So if you took Wolves as an example, that's why they let their manager go, why they sold all the players to stay within the rules.
And as well, I was
a bad season as a result.
I was listening to something on it this morning as well, and like the amount that you can overspend, the limit that the Premier League put is ridiculously high. So they weren't expecting anyone to get anywhere near it, and Everton have blown straight past it by about 200 million. So that's part of the reason
Probably so have others as well. We'll say allegedly because they've not, you know, it's not official. But you know, does anyone actually think that Chelsea and we should be pointing out, when we say Chelsea, it's not the current ownership who actually are doing crazy spending, because they actually probably are doing that legitimately, weirdly. Yeah. It's the previous ownership that's being accused of stuff.
Yeah, and City and Chelsea, that's not so much questions about money that they spent, it's about where the money's come from.
Yeah.
Those are the questions, whereas Everton is literally, you've spent too much money.
It's an easier case. Yeah.
I don't think they care how much Man City or Chelsea spend, as long as the money itself is legitimate, and the question is whether it's legitimate or not, and that's why it's taking longer to sort.
So on Everton, I mean, we have all talked about this, and we all think that they won't get relegated because there's three worse teams in them, even with the 10-point deduction. I think there's a chance if they appeal it, it'll get reduced slightly or something like that, but still, I think they'll survive. The problem, I think, maybe even if they do survive, are all the litigation that comes for the teams that they get relegated, which we've heard that Burnley and Leeds have already started, and Leicester as well have started legal proceedings, because if they'd had this point deductions for cheating effectively, that they all had to follow the rules, none of them would get relegated and fallen down the league. And that, to me, is where this could get really, really bad for Everton, because Everton can't afford to have people saying you owe us £100 million and stuff like that. They're a club that's not doing financially well, and there's rumours because of this that 777, who are supposed to be buying them, are ready to walk away. So, are Everton fucked, or will they?
I don't feel like they get sued.
Well, they've already started the proceedings. So you think that they just they won't say there's a case? Because when it happened previously, the only time I can remember about previously was when West Ham got sued by Sheffield United. Won that. They won the damages on that.
Yeah.
So
any of the last, three or four seasons, if Everton had been docked 10 points, they'd have gone down.
Oh, they'd have been gone.
And there were real measurable losses when you do go down. I don't know that it's necessarily 100 million, because you get sort of parachute payments when you go down to soften the blow a bit. But
they're
going to
get 3 points this weekend anyway, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
Of course.
You know, that's all that they need.
Do you know,
they'll be out of the relegation zone then.
And It's maybe a nice segue into kind of this weekend's fixtures, where we're going to go next day anyway, and a big gym update from Ryan as well, because he's the only one that cares about what's happening at his club, Manchester United, at the moment. Well, certainly in this podcast anyway, since they've got a lot of fans, some of you might care. We'll get to that, but I suppose, yeah, Everton are playing Man United this weekend, so it'll kind of lead us on to that a little bit. But before we get to that point, what is the big gym update at the moment? What's happening with Man United and their, I'm not going to call it a takeover because it's not. It's an investment.
So it's been basically a year now that this has been rolling on almost to the day. I think it's a year tomorrow since United announced what they called.
They were going to say
United announced what they called a strategic review, which could include a sale, but basically it was they're after money because they realised that the stadium's in a state, the training grounds are below par, and the Glazers don't want to put their hands in their own pockets, so looking for money for elsewhere. And that very quickly led to Jim Ratcliffe, who's the owner of Ineos, involved in cycling, involved in Formula One, all that sort of thing, richest man in Britain, who'd previously tried to buy Chelsea and expressed an interest in buying United because he's a boyhood United fan. So he put his hand up, and then Sheikh Jassim of Qatar also put his hand up. And there were big presentations at Old Trafford back end of last year. There were multiple stages of bidding. Basically, all while this was playing out, I was binge watching Succession, and the parallels were really sort of similar in terms of just a bunch of rich kids arguing over their inheritance, basically. But it looks like now it's been settled. So the issue is you've got four Glazer siblings who are in control of Man United. You've got Joel and Avram Glazer, who are actively involved in the running of the club to, you know, better or worse extents. They wanted to keep hold of the club. They think that the value of the club can reach 10 billion in the relatively near future. You laugh, Mick.
You can never tell.
Yeah, so you've got them, and then you've got two. Yeah, you've got two other siblings who are so sort of hands off that I don't even know their names, who are sort of fed up with it and just wanted to cash in. And what's happened is Jim Ratcliffe knows that he can't put up £6 billion to buy the entire club like Sheikh Jassim can. So he's sort of played into what Joel and Avram want and said, you know, you give me this stake, you let me run certain parts of the club, I'll grow your value for you. Because the Glazers have been in charge for 18 years. And even though at the start, when Alex Ferguson was still there, we were still winning stuff, mm-hmm. the football inside, even then, was dropping. We weren't really competing on transfers with Chelsea at the time. And then when City came on, we weren't really competing with them on attracting the best talent. We were spending the money, but we weren't attracting the best talent. But the commercial side is just absolutely skyrocketed, which is, you know, the club is still worth a lot of money and is still bringing in a lot of sponsorship money, even though they've not really been relevant for 10 years now.
They weren't getting more money than Liverpool back in the 80s when they weren't winning anything.
I'm not gonna sort of say that United have been paupers and they haven't been able to spend money. They have. The issue is the focus has been more on the commercial side. And I think what's happened is the Glazers have come to a realization that the commercial side, they've got pretty much as they can out of it at this point, and they're going to need to start trying to spend money to make money, and they're trying to spend other people's money. So I think it works out for all parties. You know, the arrangement seems to be that Jim is going to get sporting control of the club, and that's quite a vague term, but it sort of works for the Glazers in that they can just take the hands completely off. They're still majority shareholders. They will still benefit from whatever increase in value they can. The commercial side keeps doing what it's doing. Jim Ratcliffe sorts out the football side, which then grows the commercial side, and everyone makes their £10 billion or whatever. That's the idea, and I think it works for everyone.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
I think it works for everyone apart from the United fans who just want to see the Glazers gone, or the United fans who want to be able to spend unlimited money and buy all the players, which it doesn't appeal to me. I would rather see the club being built the right way. I'm looking forward to seeing the structure change and seeing how it's, you know, how the mistakes of the last 10 years start to get fixed.
If they do.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not been announced yet.
How many times have you been enthusiastic about the next thing that they were going to do was going to be the thing that took you back to the top? I mean,
I've been enthusiastic about signings and squads. Even at the start of this season, I was like, oh, brilliant. We're making some smart signings. Yeah. But it is the entire... They need to rip it up and start again, basically. The entire infrastructure just needs tearing out and new people bringing in. And that is going to take... You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it took 5 years before you even started seeing any sort of real positive sign. And that's not winning the league. That's, you know, really sort of coming up with a few transfer coups, selling players at the top of their value rather than when they, you know, rather than when they're sort of pound shop bargain bin sort of things. You know, that's the issue. But I think although Jim's not been announced yet, it was expected this week, but I think Thanksgiving's going to get in the way. We've already seen the CEO Richard Arnold leaving. The main rumours is that the guy coming in is Jean-Claude Blanc, who currently works for Jim Ratcliffe's company Ineos. So I think even though he's technically got sporting control, it is very much the Glazers are saying, it's on you, you grow the business, and then when you've grown the business, buyers out and everyone's happy. And it'll take some time, but I think, you know, we'll start at least behaving like a competent football club again.
How old's Jim Ratcliffe now?
He's 70 odd.
He hasn't got time,
has he? Build it.
So that's your big Jim update for this week. You could have just said it should be due to happen this week. I think you know that would be done. But okay, thanks for giving us the update.
I'm proud of him.
Yeah, actually,
we needed some content. So I've been writing that speech all day, Cam.
So Mick did fall asleep. I don't know what that I could see anyway.
Nearly.
Let's go on to previewing the coming fixtures for this weekend then, guys. So just going to start off, there are some big games coming up in this next match day. So I've got start off with City versus Liverpool. Probably I would say the teams that could beat anybody on their day, those two are still top. You know, that they could just go out and beat anybody in the world, you know, 3 or 4 nil in their day. So it could be a good game, but they're not always good games, these big ones. So I'm just going to quickly we're not going to go into too much detail because we'll be talking about this when we record next Monday, all the results and what happened in the games, but just predictions. Mick, City versus Liverpool.
I'll go for a score draw.
Score draw. That's a reasonably safe one to go for. I can see that. Dave?
I'm going to go with a City win. They're at home. I might be a bit pissed at the Chelsea game last week. I'm going to go with City, I think. 2-1.
Right.
Yeah, I think City will win. Like Dave said, you know, Chelsea showed that you can sort of get at City a bit. And Pep's had 2 weeks to stew over that. So he'll lose.
I guess this is one of those games, Ryan, where whoever wins, you lose. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean. So. Yeah.
The thing is, you never bet on the early kickoff.
You never bet on it. Is this like what happens in the gambling community or something?
Yeah,
like that? Why do you never bet?
Ruins your accumulator early on.
It'll just ruin it straight away.
Right. So you get no excitement out of the rest of the games.
I don't care. I don't care if it's Man City against Sunderland. I think pick City.
I think if they get everybody fit, I think City might win because they're at home as well. And I think Liverpool are still a bit dodgy at the back here and there, you know. But
I think,
you know, anything could happen. I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool went.
I think it'll be a good game. It's not going to, City aren't going to stomp them, you know. It might be like a 3-2 or something. But
famous last words, you never know.
2-2.
Moving on to Burnley v West Ham, just predictions, Mick.
West Ham,
I don't know.
What did I say? West Ham, what did I say?
I don't know because West Ham are going to have a few players missing because Bowen's injured, Antonio's injured.
Yeah, true.
Mm. I'm going to go for a 1-0 Burnley.
Dave? I'm going to go with West Ham just because Burnley are crap at the moment. I know West Ham are missing players, but I still think they've got enough in them to beat Burnley.
Ryan?
I think West Ham as well. I think Burnley leave themselves really open, and David Moyes is just going to sit back and pick them off on the counter.
Yeah, that's my thoughts as well. I'll go with that one as well, to be honest. Luton versus Palace. I don't care, but anyone have any predictions?
It's a derby, isn't it?
Yeah, Luton are at home as well.
Yeah, Luton at home. I'll go for a draw.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Mike. I think a draw.
I'll go 1-0 Luton.
I think I might go 1-0 Luton as well. I just fancy that the teams like the Burnleys, the Lutons and all that will be really trying this weekend because they're that bit closer, and they think that Everton's given them a chance now to get out of this, and we might see it. And Luton had a decent result recently, so I don't know. I could see it happening. Newcastle versus Chelsea, quite a big game, but not even one that's appearing on British TV anyway. Obviously abroad you'll be able to watch any game, but we don't get to watch this one. Mick,
Newcastle 5-0
versus 5-0.
You're not going to win by that much, mate.
I would have been surprised if you'd come up with that.
We've got a few players coming back for this game as well, but it's going to be a tough one with the way Chelsea played recently. I want to think we might sneak it 2-1.
2-1. Dave?
Chelsea always struggled against Howe's Bournemouth. I hated playing Bournemouth.
And Newcastle's feeling a bogey team a little bit as well.
Yeah, you have become a bit of a bogey team. Yeah. I reckon you guys will probably just nick it, I think. But I don't know. It's interesting. It's going to be interesting seeing how many players are back this weekend, because you've got, like you said, a few players back, and we've potentially got Nkunku, and maybe Lavia. I don't know. I don't know how close he is, but I don't think they'll start, but they may be included.
No, but they may come on at some point.
Dave, any chance you want to come up for the match? I'll take you to it, because you never win when you come.
That's true. Every time I've been up yours, Newcastle win.
I've suffered from that.
Yeah,
I'll suffer from the opposite.
Ryan, what
Dave's...
do you think about that game? Or did you just...
I'm going to go 2-2. I think Chelsea are going to be really confident from how the, you know, the win against Spurs and the
That's
performance
my worry.
The City.
And the Arsenal game. We played better against better teams.
Yeah, they played
really
well. Yeah. And I think, Newcastle are sort of, they're one of those, they're not massively open like Spurs or City are. But I think they want to play to the extent that Chelsea will probably find space. And even if there's a couple of players coming back, I think, you know, most of the players are still going to be absolutely knackered.
I think if Chelsea start well, they could get a draw or even win the game, to be honest.
Newcastle...
if we start well, then it could be us that beat them, I think. Because if we get 1-0 up, could see us just sitting back and hitting them in the break or something like that. And Chelsea, I don't see getting run about that. But at the same time, if it's an open game, Chelsea can score goals. No.
And Newcastle have got a massive Champions League game coming up that they've got to think about as well. That's during the week. So.
Do they care?
I mean, it is. I mean, there's still two games left that can still go through. They're not going to...
Nah, it's done.
You can get Europa.
Yeah, just I don't know if we want it. I just don't think we'll get the squad depth. I think we should, I'd rather...
I don't disagree, but I don't think you could tell Newcastle to pack it in with two games to go in the Champions League.
No, it won't happen.
Yeah.
No. Forest v Brighton predictions.
Forest.
In any order, I don't care.
Forest, I think.
Yeah, Forest.
Forest.
Yeah. Mm. Right, I'll go with that as well. I fancy that. Brighton haven't been so good away from home. Sheffield United versus Bournemouth.
I'll go for Sheffield United.
It's going to be 0-0.
Terrible teams.
Is that
the tea time kickoff?
To be honest, no, I think if Bournemouth play as well as they played against us and work as hard, I think they could beat Sheffield United. But
it's going to be 0-0.
It's one of them. It could be one of those. What about Brentford versus Arsenal? And jump at you. Stades would say you should say Arsenal win here, but
I don't want it.
I'm feeling Brentford might get a result.
I don't know because
Brentford were terrible against Liverpool.
Who were? Yeah, exactly.
But they can have that, and then they can be very good in the next game. That's just something.
It's one of these because after the internationals, you don't know what team's going to turn up
Well, that's the thing. Just... internationals, like some of their players, Arsenal players will all have been away playing for their international teams. They could come back sluggish. Brentford's players probably have been training all week.
Well, no, I mean, they've got like half the Denmark squad, haven't they, Brentford?
Have they?
I think if Arsenal get an early goal, it'll be comfortable for them. The longer it goes on, the more Brentford might get something. But I still think Arsenal are the favourites in that.
And then on Sunday, we've got two big games as well. Spurs versus Villa, and then obviously Everton versus United. But Spurs versus Villa is a big game.
It is.
Villa win, they go top four.
I'm tempted to go with Villa.
Here's the thing, though.
Look at what happens to Villa. Aren't very good at defending, though, right? So see if a team really attacks Villa, you can score goals against them.
Yeah.
And you know that Ange Postecoglou will attack Villa. He's at home.
All it's going to be, the entire game is going to be 18 players on the halfway line. And then you're going to have Ollie Watkins in one box and Richarlison in the other box, and that's the game.
Yeah,
and it's going to end like 6-5.
They're going to play so high lines that everyone's just going to be in
feet. Like the heat, the heat map on that game is going to be ridiculous. You
know?
Yeah.
press themselves so hard, they just become a line. and then again,
it's just going to be like Lord of the Rings at the end. They're just going to.
You know, for the rest of the league and stuff like that, because whoever wins that one, you really have to seize then get that momentum to go on for top four.
I'm going to go 3-3.
Everton versus United, you're going 3-3.
For Tottenham, Villa.
Yeah.
I think it'll be high scoring. Yeah.
I think it'll be high scoring as well, but I think it'll be a high scoring game. Monday we'll be talking about the 0-0 slugfest that was Spurs. And then on to our last game that we kind of hinted at before, Everton and Man United. I think this has become a bigger game than it would be
absolutely
a week ago.
Yeah.
For example.
I'll let Ryan go first.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be... It's at Goodison Park. Mm-hmm. So the Everton fans have been stewing for 2 weeks now over the decision. They put up a GoFundMe for banners and they raised 30,000. So they're probably going to have, like, planes going over the stadium every 5 minutes and all that sort of thing.
Couple of bed sheets.
Yeah. United are missing Højlund and Eriksen. There's doubts over whether Onana's going to play. And United don't generally tend to deal well with A, well-organised teams like Sean Dyche does, and B, sort
don't
of...
travel very well either.
No,
they?
And B, sort of teams with a chip
now,
on the... Yeah. You know, I mean, teams with a chip on their shoulder, teams with something to prove.
Especially when Everton's one of the most, when they're really, I mean, it can be crappy,
it's a hostile
when they're all getting against each other, when they're not happy,
all of their
all
players
for one cause, it can be roasting.
All of the players are going to be fired up in the first 5 minutes. There's just going to be tackles going in everywhere.
Yeah.
And United just don't deal well with that. So I think...
How do you deal with the cold? It's minus 10 on Merseyside at the
moment. So, I mean, I can see first 10 minutes a really bad mistake coming from United, Everton scoring, and it just sort of carrying on from there, to be honest.
I kind of agree with you. I just have a feeling Everton will win this. I don't know why. Yeah. I just think they will. Dave,
I mean,
I think Everton will dominate, and then I think Scott McTominay will score a controversial winner in the 99th minute.
Do you know that would?
Well, that would be.
That
would be beautiful.
Really well. Man United play rubbish, and then they just score a goal in the 90th minute from Scott McTominay. That would not surprise anyone at this point, would it? So
I'm going Everton.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you get any comments? I just one last thing to talk about this week is there was a vote this week to stop to potentially put temporary measures.
Did I say something here? Sorry, you're missing the game here.
What one?
Got a Monday night game.
Fulham Wolves. Sorry, I never wrote that down because I never looked at it and nothing.
I'm going for Wolves.
Wolves are in good form.
I think Wolves will win that.
Most people think I'll go the opposite and say Fulham then, because Fulham just somehow win games even when they're playing rubbish every now and again, and Wolves sometimes have these off games as well, so I'm just going to go Fulham to buck the trend.
there'll be another really soft penalty against Wolves, obviously.
I mean, obviously, because, with this season. You know, that's it. Yeah. So one thing I was going to mention on is there was a vote today when we're recording, actually, from the Premier League clubs, which didn't pass, which they were going to put temporary measures to stop a club from loaning a player in from a club that is also owned by the same people, that essentially that you wouldn't be able to do that. And I think we all thought the vote would pass, but it didn't. It was one shot, and it didn't pass. So now you can do that. Any just thoughts on it? Do you care? Are you annoyed by the vote not getting passed?
I'm looking forward to going and signing the likes of Neves and Savage. And
I mean, but that's what everybody thinks is going to happen. But actually, there's been no solid information that Newcastle would do that. And I think you agree with me, Mick, that ultimately, that I don't want to see us do it. I don't actually like the idea of it, to be honest.
Well, no, not really. I don't want to go out there and go stupid. Yes, we're desperate for players and cover. We're restricted by financial fair play because of what we spent in the summer. If we need to go and dip into the loan market, then let's go and see what we can get. But
I'm fine with getting into the loan market. I just feel uncomfortable taking it for a club that's owned by the same people.
Yeah,
I think.
Why? I think everybody else does it.
They use it the other way. They give their kids it to mature them in a different league. We're the only ones at Newcastle. I'm a Newcastle United fan as well. If this is your first time watching this, and so is Mick. You probably knew that by the accent. But you know, we're the only team who has owners in a league that aren't restricted by fair play that can go and spend a gajillion dollars on anyone they want and not
Which
have to
they
worry
did.
About it. You know, they likely did. I mean, no one else could have spent that money in Premier League players that they did. No, Spain couldn't have done it. France couldn't have done it. It's just impossible. They didn't do it for Newcastle. They did it to try and make their own league more attractive and get it on the TV and all that sort of stuff. We know why they did it. But no one else then has that advantage, so I don't like it for that reason. But
I don't want them to go and do it. No, if we did, I wouldn't be upset.
If they just passed the vote and said you can't do it, and then that, I mean,
that was never going to happen.
Nah, it was too many clubs in that situation.
Half Chelsea, the league has got City. You know, they all loan their players out, and they wouldn't be able to. So it was never going to happen.
Yeah, I guess, you know, half the league has got links to other clubs, really, really big links, but most of those teams are the top dog in that chain. And you could make an argument that Newcastle are the top dog in their chain, but they have got an entire league of players potentially that they could do that sort of deal on. And that is where
four teams that are owned by PAIF in the Saudi Arabian League. So you've got Al Hilal.
Yeah, but the rest are owned by the Saudi government themselves. So, which PIF was also owned by, so it's kind of like, okay.
We could bring Beat Row back.
Who?
Mitrovic plays for Al Hilal.
Mitrovic. Yeah. I don't know.
Bring back some Maximan.
If we're going to get anybody back, bring back some Maximan. Buying them in there.
The unfortunate thing about that, he's not playing for a PIF-owned club.
Is he not? No.
No.
But actually, that's not necessarily unfortunate. That might be more fortunate, actually. But I don't know. I don't really like the idea of it. But at the same time, if we loan any players and it's legal, I won't go and cry in my conflicts about it. I'll support them and want us to win games. But I just would rather see, to think that even though the vote passed, that we just don't do it. That would make me happy.
Yeah, it would make me happy as well, because then all the other fans of clubs who have been going on saying, they're going to go and do this, go and do that, and then we don't do it. We just look at them and go, well, what are you saying? You've got nothing to cry about now. Yeah.
What is the chances of that happening? I think we will do it.
And to be honest as well, you know, the likes of City, the likes of Chelsea, the likes of Liverpool, they all sold players to Saudi Arabia for pretty big fees that helped them out with financial fair play.
There's no
direct business relationship there, but you know, they're quite happy to take advantage.
Yeah, that's the thing. If somebody offers you crazy money for a player that you couldn't get anywhere else, why would you not take it? You know,
like 55 million for Ruben Neves.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yeah. It was only Liverpool and Wolves who really benefited from that.
Yeah. Mm. 12 million for Jordan Henderson. That's about 11.5 million too much.
It's the wages as well, though. Like, you know,
the wages we benefited from getting rid of.
Koulibaly.
I mean, the wages are ridiculous. Right, so I think that's us for this week, guys. We'll be back on Monday, unless anyone's got anything else they want to bring up for the moment.
I think that's it.
Hang on.
Okie dokie. So we'll be back on Monday. We'll be talking about all those games that we've just previewed. But that's basically us. That's what's been happening in the world of football this week. Not much. Some boring international footballs and a minus 10 points for Everton. And that's about it. And we've been Watch More Football. Thanks very much for watching us. We'll all be back next week. Let us know what you think in the comments. And if there's anything you want us to talk about, please let us know and we'll be happy to pick that up. Thanks for watching.